class, let's learn about the last chapter of this module on HRM in hospitals, and that is industrial relations in hospital. Well, nowadays we have got lot of multi-speciality hospitals, tertiary care hospitals. Bigger and bigger hospitals are coming up with various corporate hospital chains and all, whereby we are getting 500-bedded hospitals, 1,000-bedded hospitals, 1,500-bedded hospitals, where the employees in the hospital are also huge number. And hence, many of these employees are also attached to some of the other trade unions also. And hence, the importance of industrial relations in hospital is also increasing day by day, which was earlier mainly with manufacturing industries and all. So let's learn about some of the objectives of this topic, industrial relations and its history in India, how it got evolved in India. Then we'll learn about the objectives of industrial relations in hospitals. We'll learn about the union and their role in healthcare, Settlement of Disputes and Industrial Disputes Act 1947, collective bargaining and conflict, and conflict management in healthcare. So this is how we are going to learn one by one each and every topic, and these are the learning objectives to be taken care of by learning about this topic. To introduce this, industrial relations in a hospital embrace a complex relationship between workers, management and government, basically concerned with the terms of employment and conditions of labor of the workers in the hospital. So it's dealing with workers and management ultimately, but basically it is more regarding the conditions of labor of the workers in the hospital, as well as some of the terms of conditions, terms of employment, for example, the wage and salary, the leave pattern, the paid leave, the vacations they get, the holidays they get, etc., etc. So Dale Yoder, who is one of an expert in industrial relations, HR manager, defines it as a whole field of relationship that exists because of the necessary collaboration of men and women in the employment process of an industry. He has given a very broad definition about this. So let's learn about the evolution of industrial relations, how it went through in the past in India. In the phase one, that was in 1850s, at the end of the First World War, the British government enacted several legislative measures. The aim of this was to minimize the competitive advantage of local employers against British employers. And 1881, the first Factories Act, giving some of the right to the workers, was established. In fact, initially British wanted that the local players of India should not become entrepreneurs, and they should not be, as far as possible, earning lot of profits out of India. They wanted basically that the British entrepreneurs should be there, and based on that they have come out with certain legislations during those times, and they sought to it that the local players were curbed as far as possible. However, because of this, what has happened over a period of time, there was a lot of exploitation of the Indian workers, and gradually there was some of the active members of India, some of the people with foresight, they tried to fight against this, and then they made the British government to come out with certain acts regarding the benefits of the workers of India, and hence in 1881 the Factories Act was enacted, which was mainly regarding rights of workers. The First World War brought about labor unrest, as wages were not keeping pace with either rising prices or growing aspirations of labor class. Since the inflation was going up, but the British entrepreneurs were not giving the due payment, wage and salary to the workers of India, it was very difficult for them to take care of their families as far as the money earned by them was concerned. And of course they were working extended hours also. There was no rule that they have to work only 8 hours or 9 hours per day, and say 40 hours or 48 hours per week, like that. And this is leading to lot of unrest in the labor. Their growing aspirations of earning more, becoming more developed in their skills was not being taken care of by British entrepreneurs, and that has led to meeting of some of these workers together, uniting and gradually fighting against their rights against the British government. And that's how labor unrest started occurring after the First World War. Because after the First World War, a lot of factories have been set up and the labor class was appointed in a large number. Central and provincial legislatures initiated social legislation and started a new phase of industrial relations. So what happened? World over, these problems were being faced after the First World War by the labor class, and the industrial labor was becoming more and more number, and then they started representing their own problems to the higher authorities, and establishment of International Labour Organization came up in 1919, and formation of All India Trade Union Congress in 1920. These were the two significant events in the history of industrial relations. As we know, ILO, Industrial Labour Organization, which started in 1919, they have come out with large number of recommendations and conventions to be followed, and they were regarding the occupational safety and health of the workers, regarding the duty hours of the workers, regarding various aspects which were beneficial to the workers or the labour class. And subsequently in 1920, even in India, the Indian Trade Union Congress was also established, which also fought for the Indian labour to a large extent. In phase 2, what happened? The policy after the war related to improvement in working conditions and provision of some of the social security benefit in the form of the benefits after the retirement for a labour class, as well as some of the benefits during the tenure of their employment regarding accident, sickness, etc., started coming in. In 1929, Trades Disputes Act was enacted, which sought to provide a conciliation machinery to bring about peaceful settlement of disputes. Earlier days, people wanted to sort out their disputes among themselves, but many times it was not possible. Among the workers, some disputes were there, they were not able to sort out, they had gone to their supervisors, it was not possible for them to sort out, they had gone to their managers, and then also it was not possible to sort out. Or some of the disputes were there between the workman and the employer or the managers themselves, then it was very difficult to settle these matters, because usually managers themselves or the entrepreneur is going to take side of the manager, and naturally they are going to have lot of restrictions on the labor class to represent their own problems and to solve those problems, because they wanted maximum profit out of this industry, and naturally they want to curb the activities of the labor as far as their rights are concerned, as far as the requirements are concerned, because finally it is like whenever they can exploit the labor, naturally they can earn more out of it. That was the mentality in those days. And hence, under Trades Disputes Act 1929, a different kind of machinery was established known as conciliation machinery, which started interfering as a third party in a way in solving the disputes of workers to workers or workers to management. Second World War. force the government to maintain an adequately contented workforce to maximize production to support the war. Now, as we know, in any war, lot of money is required for arms and ammunition, lot of money will be required for the training and development of the army, maybe it is navy or air force or even on land. So naturally, the money requirement all over the world, because it was a world war, was increasing day by day. Now how to generate more money? That can be done only by generating more and more employment, more and more production and services for the people, for the consumers. And hence lot of factories were set up, textile factories, the mines were set up, and lot of consumer goods were started being produced, and at profits naturally they will be sold all over the world, and because of that lot of labor class were appointed at that time, and hence the numbers in large, when it occurred, some of the intelligent people among them started combining together and started asking for their rights, and hence the government was forced to see to it that to support the maximum production, one has to take care of the labor as well, and hence appropriate labor policies were shaped by bringing all the interests together at a common forum. Expressing its faith in International Labor Organization philosophy, tripartite consultation systems. What is this tripartite? That means threesome. What are these three agencies where the consultation will be done? One is labor through the union. The second one will be managers, the employer, and the third one is government. So these are the three parties which will be taken into consultations with each other finally to arrive at solutions of the problems of labor. So tripartism developed into a full-fledged system, a kind of parliament of labor and management was established. And more ILO conventions and recommendations were supposed to be made by the authority who were experts in ILO, and then more and more countries became members of International Labour Organizations, where they vowed that they are going to follow these conventions and recommendations for their labor. Now at the national level in India, the industrial relations were aimed at promotion of uniformity in labor legislation. Since India is a large country, the population of India is also huge. We have to have labor legislations which should be uniform throughout India, in all the states of India. Then laying down a procedure for settlement of industrial disputes. Since large number of industries were set up, large number of factories were set up, large number of productions and service industries were set up. Naturally, because the huge number is there, even the disputes will be more, and hence industrial disputes should be settled in an amicable way, and hence a proper procedure was being laid down by the government that this is how the settlement of industrial disputes should be made. Then discussion of all matters between employer and employees should be taken amicably to see to it that there are harmonious industrial relations. So this was the gradual progress that started occurring in India. The positive action of this new tripartite arrangement was in the four areas. One, the discussion on proposed legislation, the law to be made for future requirement. It was proposed, naturally it has to be then, it has to go through multiple stages, and finally it will be converted into an act. So discussion on proposed legislation, as well as while the discussion was going on, And while certain objections were taken by a certain group of people regarding that, those statements which were made in the legislation, proposed legislation, have to be modified and amendments have to be made. So even amendments among interested parties were going on simultaneously, so that ultimately the consensus can be arrived among all the parties and then the final draft can be made for the law to be formulated and act to be made from that. The second positive action was regarding setting up normative guidelines for resolving labor management disputes. Now, since there were multiple factories all over India and there were many intellectuals who now started thinking about these labor problems, and they have taken the help of even the international faculties regarding that, and then they have come together to see to it that some norms have to be established regarding how to settle these labor management disputes. So some normative guidelines were being developed over a period of time. The third one, codification of their rights and duties through mutual agreements. So what are the rights of labor and what are the duties of labor? What are the rights of employers and what are the duties of employers? All these things were codified and then written down, reiterated. Multiple changes were made based on the expert opinion of various people from various fields regarding this, and they have taken the advice of the government, as well as these things were based on International Labour Organization conventions, which were of very much help to them, because International Labour Organization had got multiple experts who have come together there and they have studied this subject in great depth and they have come out with the legislations, I mean the conventions and recommendations to be taken, which will take care of all the labor problems and it will help in betterment of occupational health and safety of all the labor class, as well as it will help the employers to implement these things smoothly, and it also gave an impetus to this movement of betterment of labor class, and hence it has helped in advising the government on ratifications of ILO conventions by these experts in India. So how it progressed further then? Indian Labour Conference and Standing Labour Committee was formed in 1940s, which facilitated enactment for minimum wages. In 1936, Minimum Wages Act was formed. Tripartite industrial committees were made, where employer, employee will be through unions usually, and the government. So tripartite industrial committees were made. Health insurance was one part of it, and so Employee State Insurance Act also was then to come in 1948, and Provident Fund, which is again a social security measure for the labor class, whereby 10% of the basic salary of the employee may be deducted from his salary every month. The employer is supposed to add to this maybe equal amount, and then interest is to be given on the accumulated fund, and this is how Provident Fund Act also came later, and this was the root of that in the beginning, where Indian Labour Conference and Standing Labour Committees have contributed to the gradual development of all these acts. Voluntary schemes were also adopted for workers' participation in management and workers' education. As per the International Labour Organization's conventions and recommendations, and the Indian Labour Conference and the Standing Labour Committee recommendations, gradually newer and newer facilities for the workers started coming in, where voluntarily the employers were told that they should have voluntary schemes for workers' participation in management, whereby the analytical skills, problem solving skills, leadership skills will develop among the labor class also. They can be also creative, they can give some creative ideas to sort out the problems of labor, and it will enhance their morale that we can also take part in managing the company in a way to the smallest possible, but at least we can do some part in that. So this is how they will be motivated, and that will increase their morale. And since there was a lot of illiteracy in those days among the worker class, even voluntarily the employers were told to start the literacy classes or education classes for these workers within the premises of their factories, maybe after duty hours, maybe within the duty hours, it depended on their views. So the basic literacy classes were started, where people were taught about the primary education and then secondary education regarding health and hygiene aspect, etc., etc. Criticism is voiced over tripartite system, as consensus of the parties was superficial in those days and the real issues many times were sidetracked. At times the government also was in favor of the employers, and many times the labor class was not receiving the benefits which they deserved, and naturally the employers were still trying to exploit this labor class, and of course part of that money they probably may have been giving it to the politicians of the government in those days also. So there was a criticism by good people, journalists, etc., who started criticizing that this tripartite system prima facie may look very good, but it is not really serving its purpose for labor upliftment. So then came phase 3, post-independence industrial relations policy sought peace in industry, and gradually fair deal to workers started occurring. A conference called Industrial Truce Resolution in 1947 after independence, Minimum Wages Act, Factories Act, which occurred in 1948, based on the Factories Act of British Rule 1881, Employee State Insurance Act regarding the social requirement of the labor class also was enacted in 1948. It was a social security kind of scheme for workers, where medical benefits, funeral benefits, accident benefits, leave, etc., etc., were taken care of. This ensured peace between labor and industry by these enactment of laws and implementation by the factory inspectors and the government body. Gradually the betterment of worker class started occurring by improving the working conditions for workers, by establishing the fixed number of hours to work, say 8 hours per day, 5 days a week, that's around 40 hours. Maximum a person can work for 9 hours, and beyond that if he is working, there is a limit to that, and whatever number of extra hours a person is going to work as a labor, he should get 1.5 times the salary, or twice the salary he was getting. So towards this objective, appropriate labor legislation, labor administration and industrial adjudication were planned by the states. So central acts were enacted, and then every state has got their own rules based on these central acts, and then this is how they started adopting these legislations in their state. They started implementing this and administering this so that industrial relations improved and there was peace among the labor class. And if there was some industrial dispute, even the adjudication started occurring by the government, state government. So let's understand what are the objectives of industrial relations in hospitals. Apart from the primary objective, generating sound and healthy relations between employers and employees, industrial relations aim is 1. To facilitate production and productivity by ensuring full employment and reduction of absenteeism. What does it mean? That means we have to see to it that all the labor class of a hospital, they should work effectively and efficiently, they should be motivated to work, and it should facilitate the overall productivity of these employees, leading to full employment of the workers. There was no post to be kept vacant, and it will lead to reduction of the absenteeism of these workers, whereby overall the productivity will increase, the people will be more motivated to work in a better way. Second, to safeguard rights and interests of labor by providing better wage and living conditions and management by enlisting their cooperation. One has to safeguard all the rights of the labor class. They have got right to live in such a way that they get good salary, so that they can take care of their family members, they can give education to their children, they can have good transport to come to factory, they can have good working environment. All these are their rights. So one has to safeguard the rights and interests of labor by providing better wage and living condition, and management has to see to it that they cooperate with their requirements as much as possible. Third, to achieve a sound, harmonious and mutually benefit labor management relations. Ultimately, in any industry including hospital, there are labor and there are employers and management. So among the laborers themselves, workmen and workmen also, there can be sometimes problems occurring, but usually it is more of the labor and management. And to establish coherent, harmonious relationship between the two, which should be mutually benefit to both. Finally, entrepreneurs are establishing the hospitals where they are instilling lot of money to start the hospital. The capital employed, they have to get the returns out of that. So naturally they expect profit out of that, otherwise why they should do this? So the benefits should occur to the entrepreneur or the employer and accordingly to the managers. At the same time, the labor class who is sweating, who is giving their lifeblood to work hard to achieve the organizational or the hospital's objectives, also their benefits have to be taken care of, and hence mutual benefit should occur. Then only they are going to work efficiently, effectively, and there will be a good harmonious relationship between the two. To avoid any kind of work interruptions, if the industrial relations go haywire, if there are unions, they are likely to go on strike, they are likely to do picketing, they are likely to do work on slow pace, they are likely to create violence also at times, which will hamper the services of the hospital. And in industry, one can understand if such things occurs for 8 days, 10 days, 15 days, well, after that they can do overtime, they can add some more contract workers and ultimately get the work done and produce what they were supposed to produce as per the orders they have got. But in a hospital, due to strike, imagine the number of patients who have to go back from the hospital, and in case of emergency, if the services are not provided, their conditions will worsen or some of them may die also. and after 10 or 15 days of strike, even though the hospital may reopen to give all the services required for the patients, those patients who have died or those patients who have become very, very critical cannot be converted into life or less criticality at that time. And it's all or none phenomenon, or no death can be prevented and no death can be revived that way. So any work interruption in case of hospital especially is very, very dangerous, and one should try to avoid it as far as possible, and for that one should have good industrial relations so that the union doesn't go and call for the strike. To establish and maintain industrial democracy, at the same time the management people should not be very harsh on the labor, and they should not be forcing them to do whatever they want to do in the garb of their upper hand, because finally they can fire them, and those labor class have got no option but to starve, and they cannot take care of their family afterwards, which is very dangerous. And to prevent that, naturally they are going in for unionism, and who is going to fight for this? But overall there should be industrial democracy for them, so that they can have their rights which they can voice, and it should be heard by the management. So what are the most important reasons for the workers to join unions? Earlier days people were thinking that the workers are joining union only for getting more salary, more perks. But the main reason many times is not only the money, but it is insecurity that is felt by them, whereby if they lose the job, what will happen? If they join the union, they are going to fight for them, and insecurity can be taken care of. So to fulfill monetary demand for increased salary, security of job is more important for them, and hence they are joining the unions many times. Employees want someone to listen to them. Many times the labor class, nobody listens to them. The employers are just keeping away from them as far as possible. They don't give time to them to listen to their problems and told them to work as they are told. Autocratic kind of behavior is very common in industry at times, and this is why a person needs to talk. Communication is a very essential need for everybody right from childhood, and when they are not heard, they will go to the union so that they are going to listen to their problems and then try to find out the solution. Lower and middle level managers also tend to make unions if they are ignored or mistreated by senior managers. In fact, in most of the multinational companies and big companies, usually don't see the union of managers, but some companies do have started this kind of unions because their senior managers are not listening to them. In fact, in banks we have got even the officers union, managers union is there in nationalized banks. For future prospects and for significant changes in top management, if people want that in future the workers should be promoted at a higher level from technical 1 to technical 2 and technical 3, and if further, if they are smart enough, even they can be promoted to becoming a supervisor of the workshop or of the board where they are working. So for that future prospects, at times they are joining the union, so the union is going to fight for their promotions also. And if there is a significant change in top management, many times the views of the top management vary to a large extent, and if they are going to alter the strategic objectives of a hospital, in that case, suppose they say that we want to stop department A, B and C out of 15 departments we are having. In that case, those who are working in department A, B and C, if they do not become members of the union, they may be just fired because nobody is there to listen to them. The top management will say that, sorry, we cannot keep you because your services are not needed for our hospital now, because we have decided to stop these services because it is not being utilized by the public outside in sufficient numbers. But then if they have become members of the union is going to fight and tell the top management that these should be absorbed in some other wards, they cannot be just removed from the service. So for future prospects as well as for significant changes in top management, a person, a labor class, a workman will like to join the union. Now on the other hand, the organizations usually don't want the unions to be there. Why? Because they feel if the union is there, it is going to hamper in their functioning. It is going to lead to excessive salaries and perks to the workers. It is going to lead to more number of leaves and festival holidays to be given to the workers. It is going to lead to decision making to be based on the union's requirement and delay in decision making. So, to preserve greater latitude in operations and managing employees, normally the employers don't want the union to occur. To decrease cost of doing business, that is wages, maintaining industrial relations department. If the union is there, if the workers are becoming stronger and stronger because of the strong union, naturally you will need somebody to tackle these workers, these union representatives, and hence you will have to establish industrial relations department. You will have to appoint labor officer, you will have to appoint HR manager who is expert in industrial relations and labor law.